Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Tune into Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hello, hello. Welcome, friends. Welcome to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm Matthew Ramsey, cheeseburger caretaker, living the high life, one high life beer at a time, and this week, loving host to some death virus eating me from the inside out.
Oh, I was going to mention that.
Oh, yeah. But
I'm Eddie Kim, a proud DCist, germ-free podcaster.
Yeah, for now.
Yes, until we make out. And appreciator of cats and fine art. And we'll talk about that in a bit. Yeah. Every week, we share a shift drink and swap war stories from behind the line with chefs, bartenders, bakers, and brewers, and pretty much anyone who touches this all-encompassing industry. This week, we are joined by our friend, Mara Judkis. Hi.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for having me.
She's a James Beard Award winner, reporter, and is a good host for the Washington Post, covering culture, arts, and all things food ephemera. So,
ephemera, yeah. That's a great word.
I put those in just for you. Just for you. I'm your word a week calendar.
Welcome. What are we drinking here?
Oh, yeah, our shift drink. Mara, what did you want to drink?
So, I picked a Boulevardier, and I was very self-conscious about it because I was like, how will this reflect on me? Like, what will people think?
We get that question a lot.
People are super nervous.
Okay? I know. Yeah, it's very anxiety-producing. But anyway, I just like to drink them in the winter. There's no reason for it other than that.
So. No, a Boulevardier is...
I mean, Carlos last week just said beer. I was like, okay. Yeah. Totally fine.
It's literally... Yeah, this is literally the drink that you drink to unwind. So, no, there's no wrong answer. But the Boulevardier does say a lot about who you are as a person, so...
I guess.
Well, how did you fall
for this drink?
It's simple,
it's straightforward. Yeah. I guess that is kind of like me. I don't know. No, I mean, I like Campari, and I just think they have kind of like a nice kind of cold weather, warming...
It's a great symbiotic
sweater
relationship.
...sort of mm-hmm. feeling to them.
Yeah. In this particular one, we are not using Campari. We are using Capitoline Tiber. Mm.
What a twist.
Ooh. Our good friend Kat Hamidi and her product from Capitoline Vermouth. We're using her Tiber liqueur. So
it's awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really good.
Anyways, before we get too far deep, let's talk about some things that caught our eye in the news.
Well, today is President's Day, which I realized upon entering the hotel today because everybody and their mother is here.
It is very busy.
But speaking of President's Day, Trump was snapped waiting in line at an omelet bar at his resort in Florida, wearing what can only be described as a beige skin suit. We know it wasn't his own, as it was in stark contrast to his very natural skin color. But the internet went all a-Twitter. What was in his omelet? What was he waiting on?
Oh, I was just more interested in his fashion choices.
More, do you have any? You're a fashion guru of sorts.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
I was not aware.
is beige on beige the new thing?
You know, it's funny. People knocked Obama for wearing that beige suit too, which was far more stylish than this. It's like you just can't win when you wear all beige.
Especially in an omelet bar.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, if we're going to link it around back to food, you know, there's a new trend towards beige food again.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. People are kind of talking about whether, like, food doesn't have to be super, super colorful and well-plated, and now it's back to a natural...
Edibly flowered.
...environment. Speaking of colorful foods, Maura, you put me onto this news story about the new food emojis coming out.
Oh, yes.
With the new updates.
There are a bunch of exciting. New food emojis.
And there was one in particular that was confusing to most as to whether it was potato or falafel.
Yeah. You know, I don't know what they were doing with that falafel emoji. It doesn't look like falafel. Like, the inside of it isn't green enough.
Right.
And it... like, everyone's confused by what it actually was. It looks like potatoes. I thought it looked like rocks, actually.
Yeah,
it's not
yeah.
very appealing.
It's fluffy-ish, but like also just kind of round and like nebulous.
Maybe the new poop emoji?
it's
minus a smiley face.
That's a hard poop.
It's not as
hard
cute.
Poop emoji.
Oh, I can tell you many people have pooped that way.
So we made a big stink about, or at least I made a big stink about White Castle and their Valentine's Day, ritual. This year they reported that 25,000 people made reservations, and the reviews are in. It was amazing and very special. People had a great time.
It's been going on for the past 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a new thing. It's not for just the millennials.
And I guess other chains are starting to latch onto this. McDonald's apparently reported doing similar things. Also, Crystal, who are White Castle posers, said that.
I don't know. Not everyone can pull off the white tablecloth. And
White Castle's, they're almost 96 years old now. Oh, they are 96 years old, going on 97. That's incredible.
Would you like to remind us about your love story with White Castle?
I'm a fan.
Okay. All right. And my last news story is going to be about the LA Times and their return of the power rankings. And their first article in their return, the power ranked French fries around the country.
I mean, one could call this a listicle.
No, it's a power ranking.
An infographic.
Very well. Infographics abound. Infographic. Fries everywhere. Spuds everywhere. Local Five Guys took the number one spot, which is, I'm happy, my favorite French fry. It's my guilty pleasure dinner.
Maura, did you see this article?
I did. Yeah, and I saw there was so much conversation on Twitter about it, too. And also, like, did you see the tweet from their intern?
No.
So when they posted it, their intern posted the link as LA Times food and said, like, I'm the intern and I'm obligated to post this, but I disagree with all of it. Yeah.
Well, the In-N-Out came in last.
In-N-Out came in last.
Number
19. Deservedly so.
I mean, they got beat out by KFC, which, come on.
And Taco Bell and Del Taco. Oh, no,
Del Taco
was
three.
On there.
Yeah, surprise.
I've had Taco Bell fries because I reviewed them.
Yeah.
The nacho fries, I got to say, they're actually really good.
Really?
Okay. So good.
We saw the joy on your face.
We also realized that you, Taco Bell, you had not had Taco Bell ever before.
Taco Bell is new to my life.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was the first time I'd had it. And I was delighted.
Have you gone all in now? Have you like had
no?
The full...
I haven't because there isn't one really around here. It's
There's
hard to
a
go
cantina
to Taco Bell.
Experience now to be.
Oh, but that's in Alexandria, right?
Yeah,
it's far.
Well, I can tell you, Grubhub is now delivering. I have not partaken in this service yet.
I am with you. I've only actually had Taco Bell at least maybe five times. I can count on my left hand.
Mm-hmm.
Not for me.
Yeah.
Well, I've never had a In-N-Out burger.
Really?
Really?
And I kind of refuse to. It's one of those spite foods. I'm
like
just
that.
Like, come on.
No, don't be like
come
that.
Come on. Come on, West Coasters. And I am now banned from California.
Yeah. Well, let's jump to a little game we play to kind of get to know you. This one's called Two Truths, One Lie.
Two Truths, One Lie.
Now, before we started, you said you had been practicing this for days.
Well, I'm a really bad liar. I'm like a notoriously bad liar. So I had to really think about what my truths and what my lie would be because I didn't want to screw it up and like have a tell.
Eddie's going to be
face.
Listening to you. I'm going to be looking for ticks.
I know. Well, see, now that I told you I'm a bad liar, I've ruined it. I've completely ruined it. All right.
What do you got?
Okay. So... what I've got is...
she has it memorized, too.
Yeah.
She's been practicing in the
She looked to her upper left cortex, which... no, I'm just kidding.
That's the sign of the lie, right? Okay. So, I was the captain of my high school cheerleading squad. I lived briefly on an ashram. And I was on the Mr. Rogers show when I was little.
Wow. Oh, these are all really good.
They're pretty weird, right?
I like them.
I feel like the ashram thing, I don't know why I would know that about you, but I think it's true.
Okay. I think despite your perky demeanor, you were not
the captain
of your cheerleader team.
I agree.
That might be meant to throw us off.
Final answer?
Final answer.
You are wrong. I was the captain. Oh,
wow.
So your perky demeanor rings true then.
Yes. No, I didn't live on an ashram.
Oh, God damn it.
My dad did, though. My dad lived on an ashram.
Right on.
So can you do a cheer for us?
And that means you were,
on Mr. Rogers? The Mr. Rogers Show when I was little.
Let's hear about that.
Yeah, so my dad, again, I don't know why all my truths and lies became about my dad somehow. It's funny. We can analyze that.
Yeah, yeah.
No, my dad was Mr. Rogers' photographer. I grew up in Pittsburgh, and okay. And that's what he did for a living.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And this was before or after the ashram?
The ashram was before I was born.
Yeah. Two truths and one lie about your dad.
About my dad?
No.
He had nothing to do with the cheerleading squad.
And then the cheerleading. This was a high school thing?
Yeah, I was really into it.
Yeah.
And no one ever believes that I did it. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I'm so cynical now.
I love it.
But I was super into it when I was in high school.
Right on. Eddie Kim, any
cheerleading stories? No, I was actually the guy in the concession stand just being really, really grumpy.
Was this your first grumpy industry job?
Technically, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Cape Bueno, nacho cheese, nachos, really gross boiled hot dogs. I learned how to cook a great pot of hot chocolate.
Mm, yeah.
Popcorn machine. I can work one of those.
Wow. Eddie Kim gives great nacho. I knew.
Yes.
Okay. Did
the best.
And Mr. Rogers' Show, like, I haven't seen the show in so long.
Oh, yeah.
He was like reading a story to you, or how does this work?
No, so I was on it a couple times. One time, the only time that that I think is like, it's online, you can find this video somewhere. It's like this song that he sings called Everybody's Fancy.
Oh, wow. Everybody definitely Google this.
Yeah. And anyway, there's like this montage of children playing in a playground, and like, because my dad, you know, worked with him, they were like, we need some kids to be in this. So I got to be on the show.
Right on.
And the thing people always ask is, was he like he was on the show? And he was exactly like he was on the show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The same person.
I've not seen the recent movie about him, but I hear
it's great.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. awesome. Well, should we dig into it, Eddie?
Yeah, yeah, sure. I just wanted to say a little bit of full disclosure.
Oh, God.
there is an article written about Matthew, written by Maura.
Well, yeah, this is how we met.
This is how you both met, right. Mm-hmm. On a couch with you wearing a silk robe.
No, she wasn't there for the photo shoot.
I was not there for the photo shoot.
Hawk or owl in the air.
But I'm guessing you did approve the photos at some point.
Oh, yeah, I love the photo. Yeah.
That was... Jen Chase.
Jen Chase.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But I was not naked. I was wearing silky silky briefs and a robe.
So please Google Matthew Ramsey, Washington Post, Pornburger.
I think Everybody's Fancy, the song, is probably more entertaining.
Two Googles.
That's how we met. You were doing a story, and we hung out for a couple days.
Yeah, and then you threw that great pop-up dinner with the owl. Never forget that.
Yeah. we had live birds in our pop-up.
It was amazing.
It was really horrible weather, which was unfortunate.
Yeah. The bird was so light, too.
Yeah.
They're huge, but
hollow
they're really
bones,
light.
Man.
Yeah.
Everybody always forgets that.
Oh, I was not invited to this.
All right. But anyways, but it seems that, like... you're kind of an arbiter of guilty pleasures, and between your views of The Bachelor, your Is It Good videos, and your kind of other food fad stuff. How did you kind of get to this?
You know, I don't know. It just sort of happened. It was one of those things where the Post was. You know, we've been going after a broader and more national audience in recent years, and so part of that was just kind of looking at what people eat and what people are curious about, and like, you know, people who aren't in DC, obviously, what can we write about that would attract an audience across the country. And I feel like consumer packaged goods are kind of sometimes undercovered in the food.
And they're so weird. Media. There's so many weird things out there.
Weird. And I'm fascinated by them too. And so I kind of just became known as like the person who would eat any garbage that like, showed up. And so it really started with all the Starbucks stuff.
Okay.
I'm like the Starbucks correspondent of the Washington Post, for better or worse.
And this is kind of what led to your James Beard, right?
It did. Yeah. And so I wrote about the unicorn frappuccino, which was like just horrible. And that story ended up going viral. And because of that, it's like any rainbow colored unicorn, zombie, whatever frappuccino that ended up coming out, I had to review. And then that kind of expanded into rainbow cereal and slime, edible slime, or like, I don't know, Sour Patch Kids ice cream, like all kinds they haven't done that. Sorry, I'm confusing two things.
But there's a Taco Bell nacho fries.
Yeah.
Sour Patch Kids, if you're listening, please do the ice cream.
They probably will. I feel like they've done a lot of weird stuff. They did a cereal.
Dippin' Dots cereal.
Yeah, Dippin' Dots cereal. That's right. There. So I just kind of started trying all these things, and I think people have a natural curiosity about them, and they get these splashy publicity campaigns, and they're like, they're terrible, most of them.
Yeah.
They're awful. And it's like, you know, on one hand, I'm kind of like elevating them by doing these taste tests. But also, I feel like I'm helping people save money, because I think there are a lot of people who are like, well, it's only like $4. I'll try it.
Yeah.
And then they regret that. And so they don't have to try it now.
I remember like working at the Chronicle in SF that like they would just send, we're just constantly getting like products sent at us. And mm-hmm. Is that kind of how you do some of your research?
We try to buy everything.
Okay.
Yeah, just for our own ethical reasons. I mean, we only we'll use things that people send us if it's something that you like cannot get in a store around here, or if we're writing about it before it comes out, so that there's no way to buy it ourselves. But if we can buy it, we try to buy it.
Yeah.
So
have you thought about going outside of the U.S. for some of the more interesting items?
Yeah. Well, I would love to do like all of the different Japanese snack foods. I am actually trying to get. So there was this. I don't know if you guys saw this these chips that came out 2 weeks ago that everyone's really into. They're like pre-crushed chips, so you can just pour them into your mouth. Yeah. So I wrote to this Japanese snack food company to see if they would send me some, because I would really love to do something on that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, this is one of the questions. It's like, what is your process, and how do you find these stories, these trends that kind of just come across your desk?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
are you just like trolling Reddit all day long?
Sometimes, yeah. I follow a couple of different like snack food devotee Instagrams, and I find out things sometimes that way.
Right on.
Like candy hunting is one of them. Candy hunting is great.
Really?
Yeah, they're funny. They have all kinds of stuff on there. And then sometimes it's just things that show up on Twitter. Or like now that I've been doing this for a while, people just... people message me and they're like, you got to try this like Peeps coffee creamer, which I think I probably am going to try it sometime.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
What are some other weird things out there right now?
I think we're going to do an all Peeps Easter episode of the show, because like Peeps, there are Peeps flavors of everything. And what is Peeps flavor anyway?
Yeah,
it's kind of like candy corn.
It's like stale marshmallow, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think so. They do amazing things in a microwave.
Yeah.
They do. Yeah. Yeah.
Battle peeps.
is there a red line that you won't cross? Something that you can't eat. Like you can't eat, you don't want to eat, you have horrible memories of.
No, I don't think I would. I mean, I feel like I wouldn't be doing my job if there was something that I.
Wow, they're really good.
Wow, your dedication to journalism is top notch.
Ooh, your editors.
Yeah, although sometimes there are things when I'm like, you guys should really give me hazard pay for this.
Yeah.
It's horrible. Yeah.
Well, I guess a few weeks ago, the LA Times resurrected their food section. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of see this nationally, this new investment in the food sections, both on the West Coast and on the East Coast. Like, do you see, is what you're doing kind of part of this new form of food journalism that's happening?
This renaissance.
I've heard it called a renaissance online.
Yeah, I feel really lucky to be doing this at this time, especially for the Washington Post, because you know we've really been investing in our food section a lot too. We launched Voraciously. I can like plug Voraciously.
Yeah.
so it's our 1-year anniversary on Thursday, actually.
Right on.
Yeah.
And you guys are, I mean, recently, this last year, we're nominated like the top food section in the country, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, we have such a great team. I feel really lucky. Yeah, and so Voraciously, we launched this kind of separate food vertical it's more for like novice cooks, and it's kind of geared towards millennials, although it seems to have found an audience with older people too, from what I've seen from our statistics.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like a little bit more simplified recipes. And I think that's really good, because I think that it's great that we have this kind of complicated, like really difficult and challenging and interesting recipes.
Your
and also like
chef step stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like people, you know, sometimes it's like, so people just really want to know how to make a really good birthday cake. Like that's what Becky Crystal, our recipe lead, is doing this week because of our birthday. And so it, like she'll like really test things to the extreme. Like we've been eating birthday cake for weeks at this point.
Yeah.
It's great. It's awesome. Or you know, she'll do that with other recipes too. Birthday cake is just the example. It was butter chicken last week.
Okay.
And it's like, it's a very, it's just a very kind of like universal and simple and like easy way for people who maybe feel a little bit anxious about cooking to get into that. And I don't do as much of the recipe stuff, but I do food trends for that. And that's also where my web series Is It Good lives.
But you're found in the test kitchen quite often.
Oh yes, because that's where all food is. I'm always eating. There's this joke that they're like, oh, we need someone to taste this. Like call down Judkus.
Yeah.
So I'm always down there like mooching about and eating people's food.
what is the test kitchen like at Washbo?
It's amazing. You guys should come. I'll have you over.
Please.
It's we didn't have this in our old building in like the pre-Bezos days. Like people had to make food at home and then bring it in to be photographed. And so we like had this space built into our new office, and it's like a full kitchen. And it has lots of lighting, obviously, for all the food photos that we take. They're all taken in the studio there.
That's awesome.
And
we used to have to like march down like four flights and like do it in this like really janky.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's like you always end up finding some closet or something.
Yeah,
I feel like
yeah,
that's
exactly
how things were. But now we have this space that's just for us too, and it's like fun to hang out in. And we all work down there a lot of times. And it's just been really nice to like have that dedicated space
right on,
just
yeah.
for us.
It's awesome.
I mean, Bon Appetit, they're kind of becoming well known for their test kitchen and all the videos that are coming out of there. And I think LA Times is about to start a video series of their own.
Yeah, is definitely.
This, like, what is? Do you see this as like a nationwide trend?
I hope so. I think first of all, just investing in journalism is important too. And food journalism in particular too, because I think, you know, when people think of the Washington Post, they think of politics a lot of time. And I think that we are challenging that too by writing all of these national stories, by becoming better known for food. And so I just think that it's great that the paper is willing to invest in food coverage.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously important. Well, we're going to step out for a second. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to dive a little bit deeper. We're here with more Judkus from the Washington Post. I'm Matthew Ramsey.
I'm Eddie Kim.
And you're listening to Shift Drink.
The song you're listening to during the break is Can't Find Ya by Keto. This is Full Service Radio. We'll be right back.
Say to me,
right, welcome back. You're listening to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio. I'm here with Matthew Ramsey and Mara Judkis as we down our boulevardiers. I wanted to ask about your reporting on some of the other issues. You've reported on a number of sexual harassment and assault stories relating to restaurants in the past couple years. I want to ask, how did you approach these stories, I guess within the greater context of all the other stories that came out nationwide? We have Ken Friedman and Mario Batali and Charlie Hollowell on the West Coast. How did you approach your reporting, and then did you use any other people's reporting as kind of like a blueprint for this kind of new issue that it's new territory? How did you go about this?
Yeah, so this this became a part of my job, a really important part of my job, and I think it's very gratifying to write these stories, and I think they're hugely important. And so, you know, it's kind of funny because I do all this silly stuff too, but then I do all of the sexual harassment reporting for the food section, and I just think that these stories really need to be told. And so what happened was I started working on this last October, really, shortly after the Me Too movement became a thing, and the John Besh story had just come out.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and so the thing that I felt was really important was that everyone was focusing on celebrity chefs and like bad celebrity men at that point. And then in the restaurant industry, you know, this is not something that's just confined to celebrities, right? Obviously. It's not just celebrity chefs. They aren't the only bad actors here. And so the first story that I wrote with Emily Heil at the Post also, she and I covered this from the angle of, you know, this is an omnipresent issue, and it's not just about celebrities, and in focusing just on celebrity chefs, we're really missing a lot of that picture. And so we were talking to women who worked at very ordinary restaurants, fast food places, neighborhood restaurants, places that were kind of, you know, prominent locally but not nationally known, and looking at other aspects within the industry too. Like, this is a problem in culinary schools too, so we talked to culinary students. This is a huge problem for the immigrant population too, who have even fewer protections and may feel even less empowered to speak out about it. And so we were really trying also to get a diverse group of women in the first story. You know, we had more than 60 women that we spoke with for that story.
Yeah.
And some of them were local and some of them were national. You know, I think I talked to people from all over the country, and we tried to get a lot of diversity, you know, because I think also one issue is that white women feel more empowered to speak out about these kinds of issues, and we didn't want the story to just be that too. And so it started there. And as we were working on that story, you know, we kept hearing about other things. And so actually we had heard about Mario Batali while I was working on that story. And we had talked to a lot of the same people that Eater had. And this is one of those journalism things that just crushes me. So we had the story too. They went up a day earlier than us because they don't have to have, we have to have all, whenever we publish a sexual harassment story, we have to have at least one source on the record and named. Okay. And none of their sources were on the record, so they didn't have as much of a time constraint. And so they went up like one day before us.
Right.
And this was in like December 2017?
This is in December, okay. Yeah, last year. Or 2017, yeah. And so you know, we had been pursuing the Mario Batali story, and we ended up finding some victims that Eater hadn't found too. So when our story went up like a day later, it had some other people. And then of course Mike Isabella happened.
Yeah.
And Tim Carman and I were working on that story together. And you know, the initial story was written by one of my colleagues in the business section, Danielle Paquette, and that was kind of just about the lawsuit. But then when Tim and I started digging deeper, we found all kinds of other, like, quite frankly, insane incidents that had happened, like,
yeah,
in Richmond. There was a lot of malfeasance in Richmond. We've talked to one woman who just overheard him saying some truly disgusting things on a train to one of his employees. Yeah. And, you know, she recognized him because he was a celebrity, and he was speaking very openly and in a very derogatory way towards this woman. And so then, then I also did the Mindful Restaurant Group, which was a really interesting and difficult story to write. I had worked on that one for a long time because
When you say a long time, are we talking weeks, months?
I started working on that in January. One of the women in that story came forward to me in January, and it didn't get published until July.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
I mean, does that get frustrating knowing that there's this kind of serious issue that's still going on, ongoing, and you can't really say anything because you're thorough with your reporting as
Yeah. Should be. I mean, I would never want to rush a story because I would want to make sure it was right. And I think that, you know, it was definitely frustrating for the people who were in the story who really wanted to come forward. And that was the case with the most recent story about Jairo Cruz, who worked for Vidalia. We actually started working on that one last November. And so that was a year and 2 months before that story came out.
I texted you right after I read it, and I was just like, I mean, it was incredibly powerful and
thank you,
really well written, but like no idea that I mean it makes sense.
I mean, just highlights how slow the court system is, because you detailed pretty much the entire case that that he went through.
Yeah, it takes a long time to get some of those records too, and then, you know, also in talking to the women who are involved in this, like I as a reporter, you know, it's something that I want to do very carefully, because sometimes when people are telling you these stories, like, you're the first person they've ever told this to, which is a real like, it's an honor and a burden to be able to like carry that story for them, and you want to make sure that they're like taken care of, and I want to help them through this, because it's like they're reliving their trauma and you're kind of using it for your story.
Sure.
And so I ended up actually talking to a friend who is a psychologist to like help me like help women as I was working on these stories.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I always want to make sure that they're like taken care of, and you know, sometimes it takes a long time for them to make the decision of whether to come forward, and I always want to give them a lot of time and space to do that too. And so that was part of the reason that it took a while to report some of those stories. And then it was also that, like, as the Me Too movement progresses, like, these stories get more nuanced, and there's more room for nuance too. So like with Mindful, it was a really interesting and difficult story to write, because one of the women in that story had been in a relationship with the person who was her abuser. And so, like, you know, that makes it kind of in a gray area, and like I feel like that gray area is really interesting, and it's something that's super common for people who are in this position. Like, her manager had kind of coerced her into being in a relationship, and she was underage at Aqua Al Due was the restaurant, and so like I think that's really more common. Like, you know, I think in these stories where people are writing about Me Too, it's like an easy villain is like a really easy story to write, but to kind of like play, you know, like to look into these gray areas and probe them and like see what that means for people who are going to come forward and how that affects their story and like how they process that trauma is super interesting to me.
Well, it sounds like, it's super sticky. There's a lot of connective tissue going on there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, as a reporter, you do generate a very close relationship with your source, and did you become kind of like a second conduit of this like release of emotions and feelings? Like, how did you deal with that relationship, this very intimate relationship that you have this topic of your story?
Well, one thing that I always want to do, especially when I'm writing these kinds of stories, is we have like a no surprises kind of mentality about them. It's like whenever someone comes forward and they want to share their story for this, like, I want to make sure that they feel comfortable with the story. I don't want the story to like traumatize them further.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, but, you know, of course that also means like doing reporting too. So like, I have to talk to people who knew them, who they might've told the story to at the time, to like make sure that it is, you know, we do a lot of verification and corroboration. And so I explain that to them. And then once everything checks out, then, you know, after I write the story, I read back their quotes to them before the story gets published so that they know what they're saying. We can't actually read stories to people or show them stories before they're published. It's a Washington Post rule. But the same goes for the person who is being accused in that story too.
Yeah.
So like we provide like a very, very detailed like list of every single allegation and every single question and everything that they might choose to respond to, because we want them, you know, we want it to be fair, and we want them to see what's being written about them, and we want them to have the chance to come forward and to dispute anything that might come up. So we try to be extremely, extremely fair and extremely open with everyone in this process.
Journalism alive and well.
I mean, just making a big overarching guess, I mean, where do you see the movement or these stories heading towards some kind of, you know, event horizon of big change in the restaurant industry? And if, you know, how would that change happen?
You know, it's really hard to say, because I think on the one hand, it's like I've been writing these stories for more than a year now, and like stuff is still happening. Like, it's sometimes, and on some level as a reporter, it's like, oh, does any of this make a difference at all? I like to think that it does, but I can't really be sure. I think there's still a lot of problems with this in the industry, but I think people are becoming more aware of it. I like to think that people are becoming more aware of it, and I do hope that it will lead to better work environments for women, for minorities, for people in the LGBT community. Yeah. Because it's, you know, it's not just sexual harassment. There's a lot of ways, I think, in which the workplace could be improved. And I think that people are starting to think about that. But change can be slow to come, because, you know, this is an industry where people are very familiar, and it has a different kind of workplace than one where you work in an office, and that leads to different standards. So, and I understand that completely.
I mean, that kind of leads me to my next question. I'm curious, kind of into the aftermath of writing something substantial like that. Like, what happens after you press that submit button?
Yeah. I sit there like in fear, mostly. Well, I think that's true. Whenever I write any big story, whether it's what topic it is, you know, there's always this moment of like, wow, like that's out there now. Like, how are people going react to it? I don't know. And so, like with the Hetero Cruise story, you know, Amy Britton and I had been working on that for more than a year. And so I think this is actually the first time someone from the investigative team has like worked with someone in the food section. I think it was like a one-time only kind of pairing. And that was great because she is a really wonderful criminal justice reporter. And I brought all the restaurant stuff to it. And so she was delving really deep into the court records and like exactly what had happened with all the various government agencies that had dropped the ball in this case. And I was working on the restaurant stuff. And then we put it out there, and you know, it is a local story. It's about a local person, and he's again not a celebrity. But then it kind of took on this national it became a national story, in that it's sort of subbed in for like, it could be any restaurant, it could be any city. Yeah. Like, this kind of thing has happened in other places too. And I think people really latched onto the notion that he only got 10 days of jail. It reminded people of the Stanford swimmer case, where a judge gives someone a really light sentence for a crime against a woman. And it kind of took off nationally. And that was surprising to us. We really thought it would just be a local story. And so, you know, things, you can't really predict what's going to happen when the stories come out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I was going to ask if if the story, or if there's anything special about the city in itself that you've seen is different from any other city in the U.S. or even in the world, that with our particular restaurant industry, which is exploding and it's in the limelight, it's in the spotlight, we're getting our Michelin stars, but do you see anything special with D.C.? But you just said right now that it's more of a national story, that you've seen it multiple times elsewhere.
Yeah, you know, when I did that first story that was about restaurants everywhere, I was talking to people. You know, I talked to a lot of people in California. I heard from a lot of people in New Orleans, actually. Yeah. Like several people there. You know, I think it's kind of everywhere. In terms of sexual harassment, it's just a problem that the industry is going to have to take a hard look at itself anywhere to solve.
And it's one of those things that kind of where you started, where it's like, it's not just celebrities. Like, I feel like if it is celebrities, then like the problem's even way worse than we expected. Like, it goes a lot deeper than that. Let's change gears a little bit. We're going to jump into our next little game. We call Rapid Fire. Time for the payback.
Rapid Fire.
So these are going to just be kind of tip of the tongue things. We'll ask you questions and just kind of whatever comes to your first thing to come to your mind.
Okay.
This kind of goes back to your Taco Bell experience, being that was your first kind of like, I don't know how old you are, but 33. Are there any other foods or chains that you're yet to experience as a grown human?
Chains that I have yet to experience.
Or like foods that by this age you definitely should have
as a
grown human.
Well, like there's lots of chains. Yeah, there's lots of chains that just aren't in this area.
Yeah.
Like I've never been to like a Del Taco, I guess, you know. Foods, I don't know. This is hard. I've tried a lot of things because of this job, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know if there's anything I have yet to experience, but there are a couple. So I have like a, I don't know, like an oyster sensitivity. So I've only had oysters like twice in my life.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I really don't know anything about oysters. Yeah. They make me kind of sick, so I can't eat them. I'm really sad.
Wow.
Can't have a nice oyster po' boy.
I know.
Eddie Kim's never had In-N-Out.
No, I've never had In-N-Out.
I love it.
Nor do I care about animal style. I'm not even sure what
I wish you wouldn't make eye contact with me. Prolonged eye contact.
Matthew, what is animal style? Please regale me.
What was the last food you microwaved?
The last food I microwaved. Oh, okay. I microwaved some leftover beans and rice for lunch today.
There we go.
Yeah.
You like taking pictures of dogs and paintings.
Love them.
What's your favorite dog in a painting?
My favorite dog in a painting. Oh, gosh. That's hard. I don't know if I would know the name of a painting because it's like, well, it's something I do whenever I go to art museums because I love dogs. And
is this
like
a separate Instagram account?
No, it's my own Instagram. Actually,
Washington Post reports on dogs and paintings.
So you asked this at a really good time because on Thursday, the travel editor at the Post was like, there's a museum of dog art that just opened in New York. Would you like to go write about it? And I was like, would I ever? So I went to New York on Friday and I went to the Museum of Dog Art.
Right on.
It was incredible. I mean, it was pretty silly. It was fun.
Yeah.
But no, I really like old paintings, like of royalty with some like tiny, like stupid faced dog in it. Like,
they always look like they're
looking up at a monarch.
They're annoyed.
It's so funny. I love those.
They're never happy.
They're never happy. No.
Some serious side eye.
If you were, I'll jump in. If you were to open up a restaurant, it's my new favorite question.
Okay.
One dish, one,
genre of music.
Genre of music.
This is the Laura Hayes.
And
Street.
One drink.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. She's...
I'm friends with Laura, yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about that when she tweeted. I didn't respond because I was having trouble deciding. All right. I feel like, let's think. Genre of music, Motown.
Okay.
For sure.
Cool.
Yeah. Drink. Let's think. Yeah, I was like tossing around a lot of different ideas and I
just know the drink you choose is going to say a lot about
I
who
know
you
see that's why I think dish wise I would go for
and you have to make it too
maybe I would do carbonara. I love
nice.
Carbonara
okay
yeah I make it all the time it's so unhealthy
but. Right on
Motown.
Carbonara Motown and but now it's not making sense.
No,
right?
No, it all makes sense. It's all
whatever. What was the other one? It was truffle pasta with.
It was like Led Zeppelin.
Soundgarden.
It was Led Zeppelin.
And
yeah.
Red wine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Proverbial hot tub. Name two historical figures that you would have in that.
Ooh, two historical figures in the hot tub with me. Dorothy Parker.
Nice.
And who else would I pick? This is so tricky. So much dead air.
We love dead air. Yeah, there's no such thing as dead air in here.
I would pick an artist. Let's see, but which one? I would pick I don't know. Andy Warhol, sure.
All right. Warhol and Parker.
That's a good combo.
Yeah. Definitely interesting conversation.
Favorite Patrick Swayze movie?
Favorite Patrick Swayze movie?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Oh.
First actor to come to mind for some reason.
Dirty Dancing.
When my dad turned 50, my mom like gave him like a journal so he could chronicle his like 50 years on the planet. in the very last page of his journal. This is the year that Patrick Swayze died, and he wrote a whole like tribute to Patrick Swayze.
Aww.
And he went to but he also went to high school with a guy that gets his like throat ripped out in Roadhouse. And like that was definitely a part of it. And
wow.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I can talk about this because my dad definitely does not listen to this podcast. But yeah, that's amazing. All right, and our last question: the deathbed meal.
Deathbed meal. I would want Italian food.
Yeah.
I would want pasta.
Rhymes with marinara.
No, not just that. Like lots of pasta. Like all the pastas.
An all-you-can-eat Italian buffet.
Any kind of pasta.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, so Olive Garden. Never any bowl of pasta. Great. Okay, that's your... Done.
Maybe something slightly written better than Olive Garden. Although I do love an Olive Garden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
What?
Bottomless breadsticks.
Breadsticks.
All right. And now, finally, a little Mary, fuck, kill.
Fuck, Mary, kill.
Now, we dug deep into your vault of Is It Good? And so we're choosing three items from your Is It Good series.
Oh, boy.
Now in season two. I'm
pretty sure the ones that you hated.
Dessert hummus.
Okay.
Gravy candy.
Okay.
And mayo chup.
Mayo chup Mary, 100%.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Mayo chup it looked pretty good, honestly.
It was pretty good, yeah. Okay. It was what, gravy candy, and what was the other one?
Dessert hummus.
Oh, dessert
the
hummus.
Chocolate hummus.
The name alone drives me bananas.
Yeah.
Which deserves
okay,
to die.
I guess I would fuck that, and then I would kill the gravy candy, because the gravy candy tasted like what I imagine dog food tastes like.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, it was real bad. It was like minty and meaty at the same time. Yeah, it's like I don't often do spit takes in the video because I feel like I can't do a spit take, but like I spat that out. So
so we gave you two good ones and one horrible one, the gravy candy.
Yeah.
What was the form of the gravy candy?
It was a hard candy.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of like those dinner mints kind of.
Weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weird.
And you liked the dessert hummus.
I didn't love the dessert hummus. I thought I was going to hate it more.
That's not the garlic sex to me. You thought you were going to hate it more.
No, the fruit flavored ones were like just horrible. Ooh. They were awful. But then there was this like vanilla bean one that was neutral enough that
okay.
It was fine, I guess. Okay. Yeah.
And do you dip carrots in these things? I don't understand.
No, like pretzels, yeah.
Maura, thank you so much for joining us. I know you have a busy day. You can revisit this week's episode and previous episodes on iTunes or wherever you grab your podcasts, including Spotify. And find us on all the social medias as @ShiftDrinkDC. Oh, wait, we have a question to ask from previous...
Oh, yes, we keep forgetting to do this. We do the...
This is a new thing we're trying to do, and we keep failing at it. So Carly Steiner was on a couple weeks ago, and we asked her to ask a question forward. So she said, name one food item better than a Chicago dog. That was her question.
She does love the Chicago dogs. I listened to that one. I mean, I love hot dogs too, but I might say...
You could say even a different variety.
What if I said an In-N-Out burger, Eddie? Then would you have to try it?
Well, that would actually answer Carlos's question. Who's sexier, Matthew or Eddie?
We're going to get to that one next week.
Okay.
One question per week. But also, In-N-Out, if you're listening, definitely send us some free burgers.
Prove me wrong, please. Yes.
All right. And special thank you to Jeffrey Lamoureux for intro music and DJ Rec Tech for the hilarious sound effects.
And thanks for joining us. I mean, do you have a question for our guest next week?
Yeah, tomorrow? Pay it forward.
Ooh, pay it forward.
Ask it for it, I guess is what we're calling it.
Okay, I would say if you could invent a Starbucks Frappuccino, what flavor would it be?
That's a good question.
Wow, that's a killer question.
That's great. What would you invent, Matthew?
To be continued next week.
Okay. Thank you, Maura. Thanks, listeners, for joining us. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.